Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Saturday night, it's usually not wrestling night in America. And if it is wrestling night in America, you don't usually hear my voice. I'm Nate Lindberg. I'm filling in for Greg Parks here tonight after WWE Fastlane Wrestling Night in America on a Saturday, not a Sunday this week. Greg will be back next Sunday with you guys. And with me tonight to talk about Fastlane, the first time we've actually got a chance to do some audio together, so I'm pumped about this. Brandon LeClaire, thank you for joining me tonight.
Yeah, of course. Definitely glad to be here and join you for the first time doing Torch Audio. It should be fun.
Absolutely. And we got, it was a fun show. Was it a consequential show? I don't know. We'll talk about it. We had our main event. Well, let me run down the card real quick. Greg, I know, usually does that. So do you happen to have, you do, 28-28. Perfect. Our main event tonight, Seth versus Shinsuke for the WWE Championship, last man standing match, 28 minutes, 28 seconds. For the World Heavyweight Championship, Shinsuke retaining. We had John Cena and LA Knight versus Jimmy and Solo in 17 minutes, 19 seconds. Charlotte versus Asuka versus Io Sky for the WWE Women's Championship, triple threat, 17 minutes, 14 seconds. 10 minutes and 13 seconds saw the Street Profits and Bobby Lashley take on the LWO, Santos Escobar and Rey Mysterio, and a mystery partner. We'll talk about it now, or at least I'll bring it up now. It was Carlito, which was an awesome little surprise there. Our opener tonight was Cody and Jay versus Judgment Day for the Undisputed Tag Team titles, which we did see. The titles swap hands tonight, 20 minutes and 43 seconds, which was a fun match. But let's head back. We'll talk about the main event here tonight. Now, how did you I guess let's talk a little bit about the build up to the match here tonight, and just kind of what you thought about everything overall. I enjoyed this match. Last man standing matches for me are a little tough because I feel like there a lot of the drama gets taken out, especially every time somebody climbs up and they just manage to claw back right at the count of nine. I do like how the announcers at least try to address that tonight. They're talking about how you take every possible second as a competitor to take a rest. But I don't know. It gets a little old for me. I wish somebody would make a good old comeback at four or seven or something. It'd be nice just for that realism aspect, but so there's that. So just kind of the drama for me is it never builds to this big dramatic point, other than certain high spots. And then, it'll usually just kind of end on a 10 count, happened tonight. But otherwise, they had a whole lot of fun. We had ladders, we had tables, trash cans, kendo sticks. They brought out everything. I'll say it, but the kitchen sink. What did you think of the match and the build up to our main event tonight?
Yeah, the build was fine. I think that Seth and Shinsuke have had a really tough time getting this to feel like a main event caliber program, and it's particularly challenging given that the world title isn't able to do the heavy lifting for them, because that title just hasn't really been established as a major championship, despite WWE really trying to make it that, and Seth Rollins really trying to make it that. And he's made a valiant effort, don't get me wrong, but at the end of the day, it still feels a lot to me like the consolation prize or the Roman Reigns is not here title. And I think having a feud like this, where Shinsuke Nakamura has not been presented as a credible main event player for quite some time, it's just been really it's been a challenging uphill battle to get the crowd into a position to believe that Nakamura was actually a credible threat to Seth's title. And I think introducing the back angle into this whole thing was an interesting way to attempt to do that and to level the playing field. But ultimately, I still think they fell kind of short of making it feel like a real main event story. And that's why I feel like the go-home, the ending of the last two pay-per-views have felt a little flat, and tonight is included in that, and not just because of where I feel like the status of the feud is, but because of my qualms with Last Man Standing, which are similar to yours. I'm not much of a fan of that style of match to begin with, and it's for a couple of reasons. One is more general. I think it can be applied to basically any promotion, and that's because, exactly like you mentioned, it does take a lot of the drama out of the situation. So much of it seems heavily telegraphed, and you're essentially playing into what is going to amount to an anticlimactic finish, because you get these spots after spots. You get a spot, and then you get a long count, and then you get another spot, and then you get a long count, and then you might get a walk-in brawl for a couple minutes, but it's all setting up to another spot with another long count. And you start to just get a little desensitized to, okay, well, this move didn't do it, and then this move didn't do it, and then so what? How can you up the ante that much more to get a full 10 count? And the way that WWE is set up, they aren't really able to up the violence to a level where you could really believe that whatever they're doing is going to get you the 10 count. So instead, it becomes just like, well, the collection of moves over the course of the match eventually just got to him, and exhaustion played a part. And to me, that's just not super exciting. So I tend to feel that way about most Last Man Standing matches. I certainly felt it here. The other major issue that I had that is more of a WWE-specific thing, and this could apply to other promotions as well, I just think that it tends to be very obvious when WWE does it. WWE's hardcore matches are always going to rely on a lot of movement throughout the venue that they're in, because they're not going to get hyper-violent with weapons, there isn't going to be a bunch of blood and what have you. So instead, they're going to create a lot of movement by moving wrestlers around the venue, and they're going to execute these elaborate spots in various locations. The problem is that the camera always catches whatever the setup for the spot is, and never fails to take me out of the moment. So, like, Shinsuke and Seth are battling on the railway in the lower bowl over on the right-hand side by the entrance. But you can clearly see the crash pad below them. So you know that either Seth or Nakamura is going to fall off the lower bowl into that crash pad before it happens. And then, at the finish, they go over to the hard cam side, and conveniently, there's this area that's kind of dressed up, and Michael Cole tells us that it's part of the technical area, but really all it is a couple of tablecloths and tables set up there with a single coiled audio cable. Like, I can't believe that that's actually part of your setup. So it just feels like, okay, this was deliberately put here because it's part of the match. And then, of course, that sets up the finish. So they tend to always do that with these matches, and it never fails to take me out of it.
I mean, I do a lot of audio-video stuff for a living, and, like, there's always a table with, like, some random equipment on it, but it's backstage. I wouldn't put it, like, right out in the middle of, you know, I mean, yeah. I work in an office, but, you know, so I put it in my storage closet or something. But, yeah, I don't disagree with anything you said. I mean, there's a lot of things that are telegraphed and stuff. I mean, it's still fun. And, you know, I think it's fun for the, you know, live audience and it's still fun to watch. But, you know, those are the nitpicks you're here to talk about anyway. But it's hard for me to get excited about a Last Man Standing match, period. And then, you know, you lump in what you were talking about with the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. And, like, first off, I'm a little sore because my most favorite title is Big Gold, and you take a giant logo and slap it in the middle, and it's like, it feels like, it just feels wrong. But yeah, you know, they haven't established that yet. They are, I feel like, you know, they're trying to do that with the number of wins that Seth, you know, has been getting, and try to build him as a strong, you know, credible champion and whatnot. And yeah, they've been doing it decently. But one of the things that I like to do is I like to go to WWE's website and just kind of like poke around and see what I see. And One thing that has stood out to me this entire time is if you go to the WWE Superstars page and look at all the champions, first off, if you scroll down, if you're on a computer, it doesn't happen on a mobile phone, but if you scroll down, there's a giant photo of Chelsea Green and Piper Niven. It's weird. But at the very top, it says Universal Champion, WWE Champion, Roman Reigns, right there, right at the beginning. Seth Rollins, I mean, he's third. He's right in the middle of the page, but he's not first. And they're not acknowledging that it's an undisputed title. So now it feels exactly like you said. It's like it. I mean, unless you're a brand new fan and you're like, okay, or whatever. I don't know. Seth Rollins, he doesn't have two titles. Why doesn't he have two titles? It doesn't feel like he's a consolation prize. I guess that's exactly what I'm trying to say. It feels like a consolation prize, which World Heavyweight Championship kind of did for a long time anyway. So, but it's tough to have two top titles. Even the same thing with, you know, the WWE Women's Championship in Io Sky. It feels like a runner-up to Rhea, at least in my eyes, it feels like a runner-up to Rhea Ripley in her World Heavyweight Championship, which is kind of a flip there, but Rhea seemed to make that more important to me anyway.
Yeah, inevitably with those world titles, I think you're going to have one that is perceived as lesser. And I think with the women's title, I absolutely agree. I think it feels that way right now. But I do think that with the women, it's going to be more dependent on who happens to be holding the titles at the time. Because I do think that when Bianca Belair had the title and Rhea had the opposite title, it felt less like that. They felt like they were more on an even playing field. Whereas right. with Seth and Roman's title is undisputed. He's held it for, you know, 1,000+ days. Rollins is a brand new title that they already had a negative perception among the fan base, just feeling like, hey, this again is the Roman Reigns isn't here title, the consolation prize. So they're already fighting an uphill battle there.
Exactly. And, you know, and not to mention the lineage that you know, the WWE title has. And I mean, the undisputed universal title, I mean, I still think of it as a brand new title, but it's been around since 2016. So
yeah.
It has a little bit of lineage at this point, but all right, let's go to the phone line. We've got two people on the line. We've got a few people online listening, but two people looking to talk here tonight. I'm almost positive I know this phone number, but I'm not as good as like Wade or Kelly and like write them down or anything like that. So area code 914 first. We'll go to 818 after. So 914, say hi. Let me know who you are, and I'll feel like an idiot, I'm sure.
Hey, Nate, it's Brad in Florida, and you're on with Brandon, right?
I am.
Okay, great.
And hey, I almost said Brad, too.
It's all good, man. It's all good. It's so funny because I completely hear Brandon and Nate, all of your points, and I agree with some of them, you know, catching the setup for the spot off the railing where it was the crash pad and all this stuff. But you know how I gauge these things? Like, my kids were watching this with me and my wife. And my wife, who, you know, half the time she's looking at her phone and looking at Instagram. My kids, who half the time they're like half tuned out, somewhat tuned out, they were all in on the Last Man Standing match. And they were loving it. And I think
That's awesome.
The difference, you know what I mean? Like, that's like the difference between, you know, someone who, like, you know, really looks at this with a different eye, like you guys do as, you know, journalists in this space, as opposed to like the casual person. And that match to me was really compelling, the Last Man Standing match. Like, I thought, basically, like, there was a lot of, you know, I don't know who's going to win in this match. And there was a rooting interest, which I didn't find in the Charlotte Asuka EO match. Like, my family was basically completely tuned out to that match because there's really no one to root for. And sometimes they root for the bad guy and sometimes they root for the good guy. It just depends on who they like. But in this instance, like, there was nothing seemingly redeeming about any of the three women. Now, in the Seth Nakamura match, like, you really did feel bad for Seth. if you're, you know, if you're, especially if you're like a kid or, you know, someone who doesn't, you know, that this is all kind of an acting job in a lot of ways, but it's, I thought it was really good, man. I really thought it was a good ending. My only quibble really with that match is that at the very end, Seth wasn't really standing. You know, he was kind of like wobbling just like Nakamura was. Like he wobbled yeah. and then fell. Mm-hmm. And that was a little bit iffy to me. You know, like why are you just giving him the win? He stood and then he kind of slipped on the table. So it wasn't even like he was standing. So that's my quibble with it. But otherwise, I thought the missed spot was really good. I mean, I really thought that missed spot was the end. I thought that was the way it was going to end. Nakamura on the ladder, the mist in Seth's face, he crashes through the table, that's it. And I don't know. So I just wanted to give that perspective. The other thing I did want to ask you guys about is Cody winning the tag team championships, because I think it sets up a great potential story. I think you could even have Cody being the person who's transferred over to SmackDown and like almost them having to either vacate it or something weird. But regardless, I think it's going to make Roman pissed that Jay is, you know, has a championship without his brother. I think it's going to set up a lot of things, and Cody's now in that sphere. I just don't know if it's the right thing to have Cody's first championship be a tag team championship. And I wanted you both of your perspectives on that. And I also wanted to hear what you thought of the crowd. You know, I thought the crowd was okay. I didn't think they were, like, electric. Like, I thought a few of the more recent pay-per-views, the crowds were better. No knock on them. They were fine. But they weren't, like, electric. So, I mean, those three things, I know I threw a lot out there, but I just want to hear what you have to say to those things.
Yeah, sure. So, first, I just want to say, I didn't hate the main event by any stretch. I'm just like, I'm not super high on Last Man Standing matches anyway, but I do think they did a good job telling a story here and certainly getting, you know, heat on Nakamura and sympathy on Seth. I think, you know, not just through the story, but through the pre-match vignettes and hype videos, promos, whatever you want to call them, the video package, that's the word I was looking for, video package that, you know, WWE's just famous for putting together. Just a quick question. Your family, wife, and kids, did they just see that video package, or did they actually kind of watch throughout the course of, you know, the last few weeks or whatever to kind of watch the story?
No, they know. We watch every Raw. We watch every SmackDown. Okay. We watch even most of NXT together. But it's just kind of like something we do as a family. But half the time, like, honestly, I really gauge it by my kids and my wife, like, as the ultimate casual fans. You know what I mean? That's kind of how I gauge these things.
No, back when I was married and I was living with my you know, wife at the time, like, that, I did the same thing. Like, she was super casual. She'd watch with me if she was awake or not doing something else. And so, you know, a lot of times, especially before, she really liked NXT. You know, when I first actually started doing PWT's NXT, and so she'd sit down with me a lot of times and watch, and it was kind of cool to see her reaction and then kind of be able to even talk about it too. So I totally hear what you're talking about. I was just kind of curious to see, you know, if it was the video package and then the match that kind of sold them, or if they you know, did know the story. So yeah, just kind of wanted to see what their perspective was. Yeah.
Yeah. They knew the video. They knew the whole story coming up with the back and everything like that. And it was, you know, a lot. By the way, one thing that was super convincing before, I just have to say this before I forget. When Seth fell on the concrete, that was very real. You know what I mean? Like, that was like, wow.
Yeah.
Like, so, like, there was some good stuff mixed in with the sort of hokey stuff, you know?
Oh, for sure. For sure. So we've got, like I said, I don't, you know, don't necessarily hate that. You also brought up Cody and the crowd. I'm going to touch on the crowd real quick. And then, Brandon, I'll throw over to you for all of it. On the crowd, I thought they were on the better side for a crowd. Now, granted, most of the wrestling that I watch, at least with sound on, a lot of times we're on SmackDown, I kind of like have it on in the background of doing other things, whatever. But NXT, it's a very small crowd in, you know, a studio. That's mostly what I watch because I do PWC Talks NXT. And I'm not really into, you know, I like other wrestling, but kind of busy a lot in my life. That's what I get time for is WWE. So this to me was like, it felt much, you know, to me anyway, like a much bigger and more kind of bump. Wow, Nate, what's the word I'm looking for? A more electric crowd, I guess, than what I'm used to for NXT. So maybe my view is a little bit, skewed or swayed or whatever. But I did, think they were kind of a good crowd here, especially, and we'll talk about it when we get there, but especially for LA Knight. My God, they came alive for him. And there was a few other times throughout the course of the night, especially Cody and whatnot, where they had their moments. Cody and his the title win. Now, I'm wondering what's going on because, all right, we've got Cody coming down to NXT on Tuesday. We've got somebody that's somebody that's going to be getting traded to SmackDown. And Cody's got this announcement that he wants to talk about. Now, it seems to me, especially since he just won the tag team titles, that he comes down to NXT and he announces the Dusty Classic. He's never really had anything to do with the Dusty Classic, except I think he... during the first ever Dusty Classic, he was still part of the company and gave the trophy to the winners, like him and Goldust, I think. But other than that, I don't think he's ever had anything to do with Dusty Classic. So I feel like he's going to do it, like announce that. We also have a women's tournament, breakout tournament going on in NXT right now. So I feel like that's kind of the time. Usually they will have like a men's and women's tournament going, if not at the same time, around the same time. Somebody brought up last night on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, which what Kelly Wells and I were filling in for Wade for. They brought up last night, maybe he's going to be announcing he's going to SmackDown. He could certainly do that. I don't know why you'd announce that on NXT. I know they're doing a lot of counter programming for AEW, but I don't know exactly why he would announce that on NXT, just other than to get eyeballs away from AEW. That's the only logical reason I can give that. My money's on the Dusty Classic, and I'm wondering if the winners of the Dusty Classic maybe get a shot at the tag titles now, rather than the NXT tag titles, which I'm not super fan of that one either, because it kind of diminishes what the NXT tag titles mean, if they mean much really anyway. But that's a whole nother story for another day. So that's kind of where I am with that and the tag title situation. Cody, it being his first championship win, I'm okay with it right now just simply because it depends on the story they're going to be telling. Obviously, I think with everything going on with NXT and the title win and everything. But, yeah, I probably would have liked to see him maybe dethrone Gunther at some point, not right now, but maybe if, 6-8 months down the line or WrestleMania time or something like that for the Intercontinental title. I'd love to see him with the IC title just because of, kind of what that title sort of kind of means. Gunther's sort of making it mean again. U.S. title reign wouldn't be bad either. I think this still works, especially with the story they're telling with Jay right now. Jay's a main event guy. Again, talking about this last night with Kelly on, Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, Jay just, he has it and he has all of everything that particular family, all the DNA, everything, like he's got it. And, he just feels like a main event star. So I think taking two people that are at that caliber, because Cody's up there too, and then putting them together as a tag team, it's not a bad thing. I think it's still going to do good things for both guys, to be honest with you. I've yammered on enough here, so let me throw over to you, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so just first to touch on the situation with the main event, I'm with you in that my I think my nitpicking about the certain aspects of the match have a lot more to do with my just general dislike of Last Man Standing matches in general. I just don't care for the format, regardless of who is involved. I do agree, you know, that both Nakamura and Rollins worked very hard. They told a compelling story within, you know, the confines of what the Last Man Standing match is. And I think the point about the point about you know, serving the casual fan is really interesting, because that to me came into play heavily in the tag team match just before it, which we'll touch on, I'm sure, in a little bit. But regarding Cody and Jey Uso and that title win, I'm curious as to what Cody's announcement could be in NXT. I think that there's an outside. See, the one thing here is that They announced that Cody is going to make an announcement prior to he and Jey winning the tag team title. So you would think that it wouldn't involve that in some way. But at the same time, it wouldn't necessarily surprise me to see WWE have that kind of step in logic, because you can make it, you know, you can make it work. Cody can say he was confident and whatever. I think there's an outside chance, given what they did with the NXT Women's Tag Team Championships and the consistent cross-promotion that they've been doing with NXT, that there might be some desire to maybe merge the NXT tag titles with the Undisputed Tag Team titles. Now, I don't know if that's something I'm necessarily all in support of, but it does follow the line of thinking they've had recently with adding some star power to the NXT brand. And it also would fall in line with the idea of tying the NXT brand in that much more closely with Raw, where it's been very clear in the last few weeks that they are trying very hard to sell Raw and NXT as a package deal to someone, now that it appears USA or NBC Universal would be out following the huge contract they gave to SmackDown. So I think that is a possibility we have to consider, but I'm not sure. It could be anything. It could be virtually nothing, and they're just simply using Cody as a way to get some star power on the show. Dusty Classic does definitely make a lot of sense, though, which also could tie into the idea that I just laid out. As far as Cody and Jey winning the tag team titles, I'm of two minds about it. I think there is an argument to be made, and Frank Pediani of PW Torch brought this up to me on Twitter, or X, I still call it Twitter. He was a little turned off by the title win for Cody, because he really wanted to see the first title that Cody wins to be the undisputed title, to finish the story with Roman Reigns. And I think that's a valid point and a valid argument. I think I'm okay, personally, with him getting these undisputed tag team titles, because it's not another singles title, and it's a clear diversion that keeps Cody in a major storyline going forward en route to the return to Roman Reigns. And you know that Cody is going to be tied up somehow with the Bloodlines business, because Jimmy and Solo are certainly going to have a claim at some point to challenging for those tag team titles. Roman Reigns is going to be upset, as you pointed out, Nate, that Cody or that Jey Uso is holding a championship now outside of the Bloodline. So there's going to be ties there, and this could be the first step in getting those two sides back together for an eventual rematch. So I think it worked for those purposes. And again, I think that it was probably pretty important to WWE to have a title change tonight, given that this was not a paint-by-numbers show, but not a particularly newsworthy show in the way of major developments. So changing the titles helps to kind of solidify a meaningful show with a crowd.
I can't disagree with you with that last statement. I mean, actually, but anything really you said, but that last statement especially, it was a very inconsequential show. Eventually, I got there. I figured it was going to be. We were talking about that last night. I mean, between John Cena appearing on the show and, you know, now as you brought up with the title change, I mean, it just kind of seemed like they needed a few things to kind of spice the show up a little bit. But we did get, you know, especially in the go-home show last night for SmackDown, some kind of Survivor Series, potentially War Games vibes between between Judgment Day and Bloodline, and then Cody and Jay, and it was so that there's a lot going on, a lot of moving pieces, but not a lot of them falling together here tonight for Fastlane. So, you know, whatever. That's not one of the big shows anyway. All right, Brett, let me throw back to you. We did have 818 drop off, so if he does come back, we'll throw it to him. Otherwise, we'll throw back to you, Brett, and see what else you got.
Yeah, I'll be super quick. Only other thing that I wanted to say was with LA Knight. Honestly, I said this to Wade, and I don't want to be redundant, but I really want to say it to you guys too. Like, I cannot believe where he's risen to. Like, I watched him through NXT, and I always thought he was awesome. But again, he could have been the guy who was released last week with the Maximum Male Models if everything didn't work out this way and everyone didn't take to him so organically. Like, he being at the top of the industry. And not only that, like, at the end of the match, the hand raise where Cena wanted to raise his hand, and he's like, nah, no pun intended, nah. I'm going to raise your hand. Yeah, I'm going to raise your hand. And actually, it kind of felt like LA Knight was the bigger star. I know that's really weird to say, but, like, it kind of felt that way. And it's, I don't want to say it's true, but it's kind of true in the context of today's WWE. Like, it really was an incredible sight to behold. And it's amazing where this guy has put himself. And being, you know, a top three person in all of WWE, is, and really in all of wrestling, is just a incredible feat. And it's really even more than wrestling. It's like a, you know, just anyone who tries hard and gets somewhere eventually. It's like a story of almost like redemption or hard work pays off. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but you know what I mean? But him raising Cena's hand and that being like the end of the way that went off, was just remarkable to see. Remarkable. And I'm really, I don't want to say I'm proud of him, but like, I would imagine it's like, I don't know, seeing your son hit a home run in the World Series or something. Like, I'm not saying for me, but like, you just can't believe that they got there. You know what I mean? Like, you can't believe that this is actually happening. And I don't know, just LA Knight is, it's a really special story that I think, is very unique and very interesting. And I'll listen to what you guys have to say, and I'm going to listen to the rest of your show. And Brandon, always great to hear your thoughts and opinions. And obviously, Nate, I think the world of you. And thanks, guys, for the generosity with the time.
No, Brad, no problem. And thank you very much for the kind words. Always a pleasure to talk wrestling with you, man. So glad you called in. But no, LA Knight, like I was, again, talking with Kelly a little bit about this last night. Kelly actually used to cover NWA Power when NWA Power was a thing. And actually, is it again? I don't even remember. But when it was originally a thing, before COVID hit and all of that, Eli Drake, now known as LA Knight, was on the show. So he kind of got like an opportunity to see what he could do before he hit WWE. We hear that he gets signed to WWE, that he's coming to, I think we hear he's coming to NXT, or maybe it was right after he debuted. I don't remember, but he's, Kelly's telling me all about him and, just kind of really hyping him up. First time I saw him, I'm like, holy crap, this guy's got something. Like, and everybody makes this comparison. So, I mean, it's not like it was a very astounding, unique thing for me to think. But immediately, I'm just like, this guy immediately reminds me of The Rock. And not in, like, a copycat type of a way. But the way that he presents himself, his mannerisms, he is L.A. Knight. He's not playing L.A. Knight. He is L.A. Knight. He's got a commanding voice, his cadence, everything, the entire package just worked. And for him to come into NXT and for me to immediately have that impression, I'm like, this guy's got something. Like, you know, his age is against him, which, you know, I think is maybe why he hasn't been pushed up until now, maybe. But I really wanted to see this guy succeed. And seeing him in the position he was, well, not just last night, but then obviously tonight, he really did feel like the bigger star to me, than, you know, which is not only a testament to LA Knight, but it's also a testament to John Cena. John Cena did exactly what he was supposed to do tonight. He went out there. He did his John Cena stuff, but he made LA Knight look like the bigger star. He let him have the bigger moments, the bigger spots in the limelight. He really gave a lot to LA Knight there tonight. And I think it's just kind of a testament to like the type of guy and legend in the business that he really is. Proud to grow up in the town next to Westport, Newbury, Massachusetts. I'm not going to lie. On LA Knight, let me throw it over to you. And let me throw it to you on LA Knight, and then just feel free to start talking about the match, and I'll talk about it afterwards.
Sure. Yeah, with LA Knight, they obviously, you know, lucked into something here. This clearly wasn't the plan. I mean, LA Knight was a guy who, as Brad kind of said, likely would have been part of the releases. I mean, these past couple of weeks, if he hadn't been released already. I mean, obviously the Maximum Male Models was a dead end gimmick. He wasn't going to get anywhere with that. Even as good as he has been on the microphone, it just wasn't going to work. Even if it had clicked in any conceivable way, it would have had a ceiling and a pretty low one at that. So they, you know, are lucky that Knight took to Knight in such a significant and visceral way, and that they were willing to run with it. I mean, I think that this could have gone a lot differently, you know, just a few years ago. We're not that far removed from an era in WWE where they were very, very much averse to playing into an organically built crowd favorite. And I do think that Knight has an advantage in the sense that he has the look, he has the size, he has the general persona that WWE looks for in a star, but clearly they missed it because he was not on their radar, and that's pretty obvious from the way that he was booked. So the crowd sort of picked up their slack and they went with it to their credit, because like I said, there was a time not very long ago where they would have buried him instead, and that would have been the game plan. So, you know, they deserve kudos on that, and they do. They have something special. And I think that in the same respect, we're not that far removed when we're talking about Cena. We're not that far removed from a time in which legends who show up to work with current day stars would take all of the rub and just leave scraps for the current generation guy. And more often than not, the Attitude Era guys would poke fun at the current gen talent, put them down, and in the end, you would wind up feeling like, well, the stars of yesterday are that much better than the stars of today. And WWE was notorious for that kind of booking whenever it involved a legend. And this was the exact opposite. This was John Cena playing subservient to LA Knight, being the babyface in peril that needed LA Knight to come save him. And then at the end of the match, they celebrate together, and LA Knight gives Cena the rub. You know, puts himself in the limelight in front as the star. I thought it worked great. And speaking to the match, this is what I wanted to bring up when we were talking to Brad earlier, in that I thought that this match in particular was a great representation of playing to the casual audience. Because to me, I watched this match and thought, I've seen this a million times at house shows. This is a 17-minute slow burn. Nobody, virtually no one needs to break a sweat. Solo and Jimmy are working at an incredibly slow pace. Cena is just receiving a basic beatdown. No one is reaching into the glove box for a cavalcade of fancy moves. They're just doing the basic stuff. LA Knight just gets to stand on the apron for close to 15 minutes and rile the crowd up, just waiting for the hot tag. He finally gets it. He hits his big signature moves for the final 2 minutes, and they go home. And somehow, just doing that in 2023, where there is this enormously high expectation for work rate, even within WWE now, they manage to keep the crowd in the palm of their hand for 17 mm-hmm. minutes, doing virtually nothing.
Yep. And that's the beauty of it. That's absolutely the beauty of the psychology, the storytelling, the John Cena has that. And like, I know he's obviously got his hand in that match, probably, you know, helping them put it together. I can't imagine he'd just come in and be like, all right, tell me what to do, but maybe he did. I don't know. I mean, everybody in that match is a brilliant wrestling mind in and of themselves. So I don't want to just give credit to one person. I got to give credit where credit's due. But I completely agree with you. They did not go out there, put their bodies on the line more than they really needed to. It was a beautiful match. I think this exactly what mainstream crowd like would buy into, you, especially with John Cena. And I think that's really what made this. What did make this work is the star power that John Cena has. Now, not only everybody knows who John Cena is, right? You're not just a wrestling fan. So, you know, the mothers and fathers and, you know, uncles and aunts that were taking everybody, you know, all their kids to the show tonight, they know who John Cena is. So they're going to get behind him. Now he's, like you said, he's kind of playing the underdog here to LA Knight. So now they're like, whoa, LA Knight, who's this guy? He's like, he's helping out John Cena. John Cena, we've seen him in movies, like, you know, kicking ass and everything. Like, this is great. I just did a lot for LA Knight here. The first real big rub, you know, he got, I think, was the, you know, the Bray Wyatt Mountain Dew Pitch Black, whatever match it was. Say what you want about like the branding and stuff. I did enjoy the match. But it's great to see him here where he is, you know, like, especially like you said, if Vince never left the company, you know, originally there, you know, what, a year and a half ago, however long it was now, he would have probably still been stuck in that gimmick. Triple H believed in him. Triple H let him run with the LA Knight character down at NXT, but Vince never saw anything in him. And I've heard, LA Knight talk about that in, you know, interviews and things like that, you know, that it was basically a death sentence for him. And the only reason that really he got a chance to shine. And of course it was about the time that Vince sort of kind of came back to power that LA Knight kind of felt a little irrelevant again. So I'm glad that whatever happened. And here we are, because it did feel organic. So maybe they just, it was organic and they kind of leaned into it, or maybe this was planned. I don't know, but it felt very organic to me, the build to get here, and a very, very good feel good moment here with LA Knight coming out on top. With John
yeah.
Cena,
to further your point too, about, you know, everybody knowing who John Cena is and, you know, casual fans in the crowd being able to get behind him and that, you know, parlaying into getting LA Knight over even more. It also was big for Jimmy Uso and Solo Sikoa, because even though in the end they get defeated, they spent 15 minutes just beating the living crap out of John Cena. And everybody knows John Cena.
Oh, yeah.
Cena didn't look like he was a threat to Jimmy or Solo in any way.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. He played his role exactly like he needed to. I mean, this is a total deviation from what we're talking about, but I recently saw an interview with The Undertaker. You know, he gave this interview a while ago. I just happened to see a clip of it. And he was talking about how he showed up to that WrestleMania where he was supposed to face John Cena. He's ready for a 45-minute match. Mm-hmm. And he gets there, and Vince is like, all right, it's going to be a 5-minute squash. And he's like, what? What are you talking about? And, you know, Cena walks in the room, and he's just like, Yeah, dude, I talked mad smack about you. Like you, and I think that's exactly what Undertaker said. So it's mad smack, which was weird coming out of the Undertaker's mouth. Yeah, you've got to go out there and just like kick my ass. And it just, you know, things like that. He's very giving, and especially at that point in the Undertaker's career, he didn't have the confidence and things like that. And he's like, "No, dude, you're the Undertaker. You're gonna go out there and just kill me." I love him. I love him. Got a bunch of stories about John Cena. I'm not gonna go there. Let's go ahead and talk about. We talked about this match. We'll go backwards, talk about the triple threat for the Women's Championship. This, again, it went 17 minutes, 14 seconds here before the main event. Earlier in the night, we also saw a backstage segment where Io essentially told Bayley not to come to the ring. Bayley was trying to come out and, you know, offer her assistance and things like that, and Io was essentially like, no, I'm going to do this on my own. Which of course you knew Bayley was going to show up eventually, and she did. And you thought she may have wound up costing Io the title. She was trying to make a distraction and ended up causing Charlotte to kick Io in the face, knocking her out, and almost picking up a win and pinning Asuka. But then shortly after that, Bayley ended up distracting the referee when Charlotte had Asuka in a figure eight, and that distraction allowed Io to I think it was a splash off the top rope onto Charlotte doing the figure eight.
It's a moonsault.
And then it was a moonsault. Okay, I couldn't remember if it was the moonsault or if it was the splash, but I knew it was a really cool high flying move. Let's put it that way. But on to Charlotte, and then picked up the pin for the win there. So Bayley, it looked like she might have cost her the title, but in the end, she did wind up coming in handy. So we'll see how that winds up playing into that story. There's been some contention there between Io and Bayley. We talked a little bit about it last night on the post show. I feel like it's kind of diminished Io's title run a little bit. She kind of feels like she's still playing second fiddle to Bayley. And that's the story they're going with right now. But I don't know. I don't feel like it's doing Io any favors unless they're building something really, really good for Io. I'm not a real big fan of what they're doing with it at the moment. The match itself was fine. Triple threats as DQ matches, like, I've got my qualms about it and whatever. But for what they did with it, I'm not, you know, rules and my feelings of a triple threat match aside, what they did with it, I thought was really good. There was some good pacing, just kind of a lot of fun spots here in the match. A lot of false finishes. Wasn't quite sure which way they were going to wind up going with this. You know, I figured Io was probably going to retain. Just kind of with the story that they've been telling, but, Bayley coming out towards the end kind of cast that doubt on me there. And I thought Charlotte had the win for a little bit, a couple different times there. Kind of glad to see Io retain, although I would love to just see Asuka with the title around her waist, cause I love Asuka. So there's that too. What did you think about the, triple threat match for the women's title?
Yeah, I thought it was a fun match. I mean, I want to get that out of the way first, because I feel like a lot of the other stuff I'm going to say is a little bit negative. So I want to say I did like the match, but I think that it suffered from a few different things, namely the fact that they just haven't done a really good job with this division lately. I think I agree with you in that Io Sky hasn't really been presented as that much of a credible champion. She, you know, of course, wins by cashing in Money in the Bank, which in and of itself is sort of a nefarious way to come about a title win. So usually after doing so, it's pretty important for them to establish the title holder with some important wins. And in fact, they even alluded to it. I mean, at the start before the match, Michael Cole on commentary said that this was the most important match of Io Sky's career because she hadn't really proven herself to the locker room yet as champion. And that was a line that I think really hits home because I think the crowd's feeling it. I think you can kind of see it on TV, and I think you can kind of even see it on Io's face. I mean, she's in this spot, but she doesn't feel that much like a champion right now. And it even came up, you know, inadvertently in our conversation earlier, comparing the Universal, Undisputed Universal Championship and the World Heavyweight Championship to the two opposing women's titles, where Rhea Ripley's title feels drastically more important right now because she is just presented as a bigger and better champion than Io Sky. So that was issue number one. The second was more on a really micro level. I just wish that Charlotte would stop doing that moonsault on the outside.
Yeah.
It just never lands. I can't think of when the last time she landed it was. And tonight, the crowd even started to boo her when she climbed to the top rope, which was a little surprising. They were sort of, you know, on the cusp throughout the night. I felt like she really had them in the early going. I mean, they were really getting into the woos and doing when she was doing the chops and stuff. And I know that's just a fun thing that they like to do, regardless of whether or not they like Charlotte that much. But still, it felt like she was more or less the babyface in the match. And then as things progressed, it felt like they kind of turned on her a little. And by the time she went up there for that moonsault, it was almost, you know, entirely negative. So she misses that moonsault. And, of course, it looks even worse coming off the fact that Io Sky missed a moonsault like 30 seconds before that. So it was two botched spots right in a row. So that was a downer. But other than that, I thought that the match was good. I thought that there were some cool spots between the three women. I'm a big fan of someone coming off the top while Charlotte is in a bridge. I think that always looks really killer. Yeah. And it did here, too. Io hits the moonsault and gets the pin. So I'm happy that Io retains because I think that they still should put some work into establishing her as a credible champion. I don't like that they gave Charlotte the visual win. They do that so often in these matches. They give people visual wins to set up additional title matches down the road. And to me, it's just a little lazy. There's other ways to establish contenders, and when they do these visual wins, it further cheapens the actual pinfall. So Charlotte gets the tap out. Referee doesn't see it. Io Sky is already working an uphill battle in terms of credibility because Bayley has interfered on her behalf. And now she's getting a pin after one of her opponents has already tapped out. It's just a double hit to someone who I think really needed to escape this match with credibility and didn't.
No, I can't disagree. I can't disagree whatsoever. Excuse me one second. Wow. Have you ever had like that sneeze in the back of your – and it just won't come out?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. It was like – you threw back to me at the worst time, but it's okay. I'm not – it's all right. It's all right.
I planned it. I knew it was coming.
Oh, my God. Let's talk about Street Profits Bobby Lashley versus LWO. Special entrance, unknown entrant, Carlito coming out. And I'm kind of hoping this is a re-debut and it's not just another one-off appearance. Like, I think it was Backlash. It was the show in Puerto Rico, Backlash. Okay. So I hope it's not another one-off. I love Carlito, especially after everything he did, you know, on the indies, what he did with GLOW. He's done a lot of other, choreography, wrestling choreography in different shows. I think heels too. So like he's all over the place. Love his work. Really liked him tonight. He had a couple spots that looked, I don't say sloppy or maybe a little tiny bit mistimed, but I feel like it might have just been like excitement. It really just seemed like he was going a little bit like too fast at one point, but whatever. I was excited to see him. The crowd was absolutely excited to see him. He looked great. Again, just like he did in Backlash, you know, his definitely keeping up the body, especially for, you know, he's starting to get up there in age. I thought it was a great entrance. I did call it last night. I'm proud of that. Kelly didn't see it coming. Kelly didn't see it coming. I called him like, I think it's Carlito. And he's like, ooh, I think it might be Carlito. And now I get to poke fun at him for it. Cause it's not very often that I'm right and he's not. So I like that. It's fun. So this match itself, I thought this was a fun tag match. We had a lot of tag team matches tonight, or at least multi-person matches. I thought this was a fun match. Street Profits, Bobby Lashley, I'm really liking this pairing. I wasn't quite 100% sure what to think about it at first. I was for it. Like I thought it was a good idea. But I wasn't quite sure how the Street Profits would fare after kind of, you know, turning heel and getting rid of all of the things that made them popular in the first place, because that's what we know, you know. So it's kind of taking them and into kind of the unknown. As we discussed again last night, and it's something that it was something I got to learn from Kelly's vast knowledge of NXT. Angelo Dawkins did have a heel run at one point in NXT. I think it was his first, it's one of his first or second kind of like feuds in NXT before he started to break out and do some stuff with the Street Profits. This was a long time ago. But other than that, he's, you know, been a babyface. Montez Ford's been a babyface his entire career. So I was curious to see how they were going to be able to handle a heel role. I really like what they're doing so far. They're dressing sharp, exactly like Bobby Lashley. So they're fitting right in there. I feel like their demeanor fits what Bobby Lashley is going for. It's kind of like essentially the Hurt Business type of a vibe, but they're not calling it the Hurt Business, but it's kind of the vibe that at least I'm getting from it anyway. I'm sure a lot of people are drawing that comparison too. I really like what they're doing here. I think, you know, eventually they're probably going to turn face again and pick up all of the gimmicks that they, they've lost. But I think we're going to see a range out of the Street Profits that we haven't before. One thing that I'm really excited to see is if this is Montez Ford's breakout moment. And we've talked about this for a long time, that Montez Ford especially has the potential to be a breakout star. There have been big legends, and I want to say it was The Rock that I remember seeing this, but I could be wrong. But I remember it was a big legend. You're talking about Montez Ford and how he could be, and you know, like the next top guy for WWE. So I'm curious to see if this is maybe I don't think they're setting this up as like an intentional test for him, but I'm kind of thinking this might be like an unintentional test for him, and at least a way for him to showcase a range that he hasn't been able to before, and maybe potentially, you know, break away from, you know, tag division and kind of show us what what he's got. What do you think about this and kind of the build up to the Street Profits?
Intentionally or not, I think you're right. This is definitely a potential showcase time period for Montez Ford. And I think that in the last, you know, the last year and a half to 2 years or so, we've seen him kind of put on some weight, looks like a bigger dude now, definitely looks like he could hang in the main event scene. He's filled out. And that's all good. Obviously he's got the charisma, he's got the in-ring ability. He has virtually everything you want to see out of a potential big breakout star. And I think that one of the biggest things holding him back has been the sort of redundancy of the Street Profit gimmick and where they've been as an act for a long time. So switching that up, just the change of pace, the change of scenery, the new look is a great way to see what he's got, what kind of range he has. And putting him with Bobby Lashley is great because Lashley is an established veteran. He's over with the crowd, be it a babyface or heel. He's an effective character. He's impressive in the ring. the Hurt Business was a really cool idea and a really cool faction that didn't ever feel like it ran its course. In fact, it felt like it was disbanded far too quickly, and there was more meat on the bone there. So the idea of getting a new faction built with, again, Bobby Lashley at the helm, and two guys who I think are stronger in pretty much every way than Shelton and Cedric Alexander, is a really intriguing prospect. And that's why this match kind of let me down, because I thought that what they did was impressive. I thought the look was impressive. The fact that they came out in matching attire worked really well. It was cool to see the Street Profits come out and sort of part ways in the middle for Bobby Lashley to join them. No cups in the entrance. You could see, you know, the new attitude. And then I felt like this debut for this brand new faction that shows all this promise was sort of undermined by Carlito's return. And I don't want to take away from Carlito's return, because I'm a fan of the guy too, and I think this is a full return. I mean, there were rumors throughout late spring and early summer that Carlito had signed, and they were just waiting for the right time to bring him out on the road. So I assume that this was the official, you know, re-debut, as you mentioned, and that he is set to become a part of the roster. So I like that. I'm happy about that. But I'm wondering why they felt the need to do it on a night that you're also debuting this faction in the ring for the first time. To me, they would have been better served having Lashley and the Street Profits go over strong against Mysterio and Escobar and a third, you know, either one of the two other members of the LWO. And then introduce Carlito shortly thereafter as a way to even the score against Lashley and company, rather than have them go over clean tonight, just because I think it sets things off on the wrong foot for this new faction.
No, I can't disagree with you there either. You know, and I don't know if I necessarily thought about it in the moment, but like, you're kind of right. It does undermine it a little bit. Like, you know, a lot of people are talking about Carlito. Probably not so much Street Profits. It would have been nice maybe if they did kind of debut some of that a little bit beforehand, maybe last night or something like that. Especially with Carlito coming up here tonight. So yeah, I can't disagree with it there whatsoever. All right, let's move on. We talked a little bit about our opening match. Kind of more so about Cody and Jay than you know, the match itself. But to our opening match tonight, 20 minutes, 43 seconds, Cody and Jay versus the Judgment Day for the Undisputed Tag Team titles. Cody and Jay able to pick the titles up and actually walk away as Undisputed Tag Team champions. The match, again, I thought this was a fun opening match, a long opening match. Jay, as I said earlier, Jay looks like a star, and I thought he really was able to shine here tonight in this match. Towards the end, it kind of got a little bit overbooked, I guess. The Judgment Day is kind of
Day stuff often does.
As they often do. It's kind of funny because like I'm intrigued by it, and I kind of often let it slide, but like at the same time, man, you know, it's getting a little predictable, or has for a little while anyway. But other than, you know, kind of the finish here, I enjoyed the match and what was going on. A couple things that, you know, actually one thing that I really thought was interesting, it's just a small little thing, but I really liked the fact that on commentary, I think it was Michael Cole, acknowledged the fact that both Balor and Cody had led the Bullet Club in the past.
Yep.
I'm not sure if they've brought up Bullet Club in that context before. I'm sure they probably have. But man, it was, there was a time where they would never say that. So it was just kind of cool to hear that. But what did you think about this opening match? It was okay, as I said, but definitely overbooked towards the end, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought that it was a little curious to kick off with this, and once you in hindsight, you kind of understand why. I mean, if they're going to close with Nakamura and Rollins, which I feel like you kind of have to do, even if your hand is toward a sort of tipped in another way, I think you sort of have to go with that, just so that you don't send a detrimental message about the World Heavyweight title. So with that in mind, I think the only choice was to open with this, knowing how hot the crowd was going to be for Cody and Jay, and they were right. I mean, they were right to bet on that. Cody and Jay got a huge reaction. The one little misstep in this match that I don't know if they accounted for is just the fact that when you're opening up a show, you want those big reactions at the start, you know, for your stars who were involved in the match, and they got them for Cody and Jay. But then very quickly this devolved into your standard WWE style tag team match, where they do a really, really long beatdown and build to a hot tag. And they ended up doing this three times tonight. First in this tag team title match, then in the six-man tag with Escobar and Rey before Carlito showed up, and then the big one with John Cena and LA Knight. This is not something that WWE usually looks over. Typically, the agents are involved enough to not allow something like this glaring to happen. And I know that it's their standard way of producing tag team matches, but someone should have said, hey, like, we've got three tag matches on this show, so we have to be mindful of this. I thought it hurt in a number of ways, because not only are you doing it multiple times, but you're also doing it to start the show. So as quickly as the crowd got up and ready to go for this pay-per-view event or premium live event, just as quickly they were brought back down into the lull of a Judgment Day beatdown on Jey Uso for an extended period of time. So they lost the crowd a little bit there in the beginning. But once Cody got the hot tag and they started to tag in and out and things got more fluid, I thought it picked up really nicely and the back and forth action was really good. We've discussed, of course, like the implications of Cody and Jay winning the tag team titles. I do agree, though, the ending a little bit convoluted, a little bit overbooked. That tends to be how these Judgment Day matches go. I do think that with this finish, though, with Cody and Jay going over, there is a path here for Judgment Day to be shaken up, because there's a pretty clear tide going with Rhea Ripley. I think it's very obvious that the crowd wants to cheer her, and the only thing holding them back from doing so is Dominic Mysterio. So before too long, I would suspect that you might see Rhea go her own way. Now, the one caveat and the one downside to that with the Judgment Day is at this point, I think Rhea is good enough to not only stand on her own without the Judgment Day, but to excel beyond what she's already done with the Judgment Day by going out on her own. For Balor, I don't know if it gets better than this. And for Dominic and for Damian, I don't think it gets better than this. I think that a lot of Dom's heat has been, you know, aided by being surrounded by the Judgment Day. If he is not being bailed out by his cohorts, then he's just a wrestler who can't keep up with other guys in the ring and is going to lose all the time. And the heat isn't there. The heat is in the fact that he's always bailed out. So if that goes away, I think you lose a lot for Dom. And then on the Priest side, I just don't think he's ever clicked. I think the closest that he's gotten to clicking is with Judgment Day. And if you take that away, I'm just not sure what's left.
You know, I can't disagree with you on Priest. Like, Priest is, I feel like, he's a great talent, you know, great in-ring worker. And, you know, there's definitely something there. But, yeah, he's always felt like that with me. It's like always on the, like, on the cusp of breaking out and being great. But, like, even down in NXT, you know, the Archer of Infamy and that gimmick, mm-hmm. it was good. It was entertaining. I liked him, but it felt like there was a ceiling there. And there's always kind of felt like there was a ceiling on his character. And becoming Mr. Money in the Bank, or Senor Money in the Bank, excuse me, you know, it's kind of, you know, another notch in his, you know, that notch in his cap, kind of saying, like, essentially that they're pushing him, you know, that he might be a main event,
right.
He might be main event player. And I just don't know if I believe it. It's, I definitely believe it more than I ever did with, you know, any other gimmick he's been, you know, now that he's been with Judgment Day and everything he's done. But, you know, again, you take all of that away for both him and Dom, for that matter, like you said, you know, where do they go? You know, Dom, it's kind of been interesting to watch him down in NXT because he's not like, he's actually been able to keep up with most, like, he's actually had really good matches down in NXT. I've been really surprised with his in-ring work, you know, down there, and you know, probably because it's developmental. You know, I've liked what he's been able to do down there, but man, even when he comes out by himself, the heat that he gets is unreal. However, it's unreal because, you know, he does have the Judgment Day behind him. They might not be right there with him in the moment, but, you know, he does have them kind of like, you know, in his corner most nights of the week. So I think he's, if he can ride that somehow and kind of whatever his next character is, his next gimmick is, this next incarnation of Dominic Mysterio, as long as he can kind of still ride that, yeah, he might be okay. But I do kind of worry for him as well. Once, you know, the Judgment Day, it kind of runs dry. You know, it just kind of feels like he could very easily get relegated right back to the mid card and just, you know, not feel nearly as important as he has been for, you know, the last handful of months.
Yeah, so much of the hook with him is sort of the believability of this idea that he's sort of he's this sub to Rhea Ripley, essentially. I mean, people think it's funny. They buy into it. They play into it. The fact that Rhea dominates him, you know, she's more imposing physically. I mean, they lean into the gimmick heavily on television and interviews. Basically, everything they do, they lean heavily into the gimmick. And if you take that away, I mean, I don't think that they go and do something like a Rhea Ripley versus Dominic Mysterio match. I can't see them really crossing that line. I mean, I'm sure that when the split eventually happens, you know, Rhea will give him a Riptide or something like that, but I don't think that they'll actually work a match together. So yeah, he's got to find a way to parlay the heat into something else and carry it over, because so much of what got that character over was the disconnection from reality. The idea that, like, I mean, Prison Dom is what got him over. The idea that he went to jail for a night for trespassing on his parents' property, and that meant he had been in prison. And everyone's in on the joke, but he buys it and sells it with such believability that you can't help but hate the guy. But when he's not able to back that up anymore because he doesn't have these more established wrestlers and this dominating, you know, female force behind him, I just wonder where that goes. I wonder how it presents. And with Finn Balor, I don't know. You know, with him, it's not as much of a concern because Finn is a guy who's established enough and is over enough that I think he finds his way without Judgment Day. But, I mean, he's certainly never been more important to the roster than he is right now.
No, I completely agree. I completely agree with you there. All right, let's keep things moving on here, and let's so we talked about all of our matches. There's a couple things that I wrote down that I did want to talk about a little bit. We did see Pat McAfee come out with the custom edition Colts title, since they've got these really ugly and stupidly overpriced NFL titles for sale on WWE Shop. I'm a title guy.
Boy, is it smart.
Totally smart. Like, they're gonna bring in a ton of money with those, I guarantee it. But man, as a title guy, Oh, they're so ugly.
They are.
So ugly. Yeah, but it was cool to see Pat McAfee, you know, especially being in, you know, his neck of the woods. It was, you know, kind of, you figured he was probably going to show up. I honestly didn't think about him showing up, and maybe there were signs and, you know, on social media pointing it out. I don't know. It was a nice kind of surprise for me, but it obviously made sense being where they were. I like Pat McAfee. He's not everybody's cup of tea. I really like what he delivers when he's on commentary. You know, him and Michael Cole are just a great pairing for me in the style of commentary that I like. I even just, you know, watching his podcast on YouTube is fun. That, I usually talk when he's talking wrestling anyway. I'm not much of a sports guy, so like when he starts talking football, I'm like, I'm done. But otherwise, like, you know, like the guys, it was a cool moment for me. Anything that you want to talk about with Pat McAfee before I got a couple other things I want to bring up?
Yeah, Pat, I'm always happy to see Pat. I mean, I'm with you. I'm in the camp of enjoying what he brings to the product. Usually, I think there have been times where he has not crossed the line, but just stepped over a boundary into a territory where he was a little annoying, spoke out of turn in a yeah. way to say, like, there's been a couple of moments where it's been pretty clear that he doesn't really know what's going on with the product, even though he tries to make it appear as though he does. And so he's, you know, put his foot in his mouth a couple of times. But I mean, that's what you're going to get from a personality like that. I think overall, for you know, in large part, his contributions to the company have been a very, very strong net positive. I think he was mostly very good on commentary with Michael Cole. It's probably he and Cole together on SmackDown is honestly probably the most I've enjoyed WWE commentary at any point in the last 20 years. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that Pat had so much genuine, unbridled enthusiasm for the product. It was so clear when he was there every week and he was, you know, in on the beat by beats of the stories that he loved it. He loved doing it. And it showed. It was blatantly obvious in a way that a Corey Graves can't replicate, Wade Barrett can't replicate, nobody they've had, you know, in the last 10, 15 years or since Pat can replicate what he was doing from a pure enthusiasm standpoint. So I'm always happy to see him. He brought the enthusiasm as usual. Crowd ate it up being, you know, in Indianapolis. The push for WrestleMania was whatever. I mean, I don't think that Indianapolis is going to be a strong contender for WrestleMania. I mean, perhaps they will down the road, but at this point, WrestleMania has become such a desirable commodity, and WWE has become so snobbish in the way that they book their major events. To me, I think they would turn their nose up at putting WrestleMania in Indianapolis, but maybe not. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like something they want to bring to that area of the country. So I don't know. I mean, it just felt like kind of like a cheap pop, but whatever.
Yeah, that's kind of why I glossed over it. Like, just whatever. A couple of the things that, you know, I do want to just, because like I said, we've never done audio before, and, you know, just kind of wanted to get your perspective on, actually really just one thing is, you know, right now there's a lot of crossover between NXT and the main roster. NXT has been, you know, 2.0 was really focused on, you know, developmental, pushing the new younger talents. And you know, they did not have a whole lot of main roster talent or main roster crossover on NXT 2.0 when it was still branded 2.0. With the exception of Dolph Ziggler, towards the end of the 2.0 era, they kind of started to do that, you know, with Dolph Ziggler a little bit. And I think there was might've been one or two others, but then they started to introduce a little bit more main roster talent and there's some more crossover. But now it almost seems like they're trying to do what they did with Sunday Night Heat back in the day, like way back in the day, and make it must-see television where they're weaving stories, main roster stories through NXT, and where they're actually – they kind of have or at least could potentially have big implications. Or you know, not always. Sometimes it does seem like a money not a money grab, ratings grab, or you know, AEW cross booking, you know, potentially like in the case of, you know, Tuesday night. But it almost to me kind of feels like they're going in that direction with NXT, and they're trying to make it a third show where they'll have maybe both Raw and SmackDown stories kind of weave through to kind of get more eyeballs on the product, but not only, you know, but also there's like kind of getting those veterans on the show where it is developmental. They're kind of, they're going to be able to, like, you know, teach some of the younger talent, you know, a little bit more than you know, what they might just get from the trainers down at the Performance Center. If it sounds like I'm tired, I am. Barely slept last night. I know I'm stumbling over my words. I'm kind of struggling to get through the end of this podcast. I apologize. But I did want to at least get you know, kind of your take on, you know, what NXT, like, the direction they're currently going with NXT. And, you know, if you dig it, or if you prefer them, just kind of go back to developmental.
Yeah, it's a really interesting conversation. And I'm certainly intrigued, because I'm someone, and I've said this on you know, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows that I've done, and also on some of these post PLE or pay-per-view shows with Greg. I was a tried and true diehard fan of Black and Gold NXT. To this day,
yep,
that product is, yeah, that product to me is my favorite stuff in pro wrestling in the last 15 plus years. I'll take it.
It's my modern day Attitude Era.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, it is for me as well. And I gave up on NXT when 2.0 hit, because for me, it, yeah, like you, I only have so much time in a week. And for me, it became, all right, I know I'm going to watch Raw and SmackDown, and I also want to watch AEW Dynamite. I'm not going to have time for all of this. Something has to get the cut. And it was NXT, because I just didn't like the direction. I didn't like the look. I didn't like the feel. I didn't like the way the Performance Center was laid out. All of, yep, all of it was a turnoff to me. And I haven't really returned, save for the specials. I've tried to keep up with most of the specials, and for the most part, in the last, you know, 6 to 8 months or so, I thought they were very good. I thought that last week's show, yeah, was very good. It was much closer to the NXT that intrigues me. So from a personal time standpoint, am I super excited about the idea that it feels like NXT might kind of become a program that I want to maybe, you know, set the DVR for again? No. And that's just because I have so much stuff to watch beyond wrestling that I can barely keep up with, let alone, yeah, the wrestling that I watch in a given week. But do I think it's a cool opportunity to make NXT very relevant again? Of course, absolutely. I mean, I would love to see NXT succeed. I don't think it'll ever return to, you know, the glory days of Black and Gold, but if it can be a really strong weekly product again with these really strong special events, which it seems like they're already having, then I think it's a net positive. I do wonder if the influx of main roster talent on such a consistent basis is something that they're hoping to make permanent or semi-permanent, or if it is, like I alluded to earlier, strictly a tactic to try to, and this is absolving this upcoming Tuesday entirely, because we know exactly what that is. That,
exactly,
is, yes, counter promoting AEW Dynamite. I'm telling you, if WWE could unleash clones of prime age Steve Austin and The Rock, they'd, oh, have, God, them wrestle on NXT this Tuesday, and then they would talk for 3 weeks afterward about how they beat AEW by 100,000 viewers. I'm telling you, they would do it. If they could do it, they would do it. That's how serious they are about this Tuesday. But beyond, I mean, the fact that they're throwing out the gong and bringing The Undertaker to the show tells you everything that you need to know
right.
about what this Tuesday means. But, I mean, they just really, really want to ruin Tony Khan's birthday.
Is it his birthday? I didn't know that.
It is. Tuesday is his birthday, yeah.
Oh, wow, okay.
In fact, it's funny. Tony's such a quirky guy. He posted like the card, the lineup that they've got for Tuesday's show, and he's listing match by match. And of course, you know, Adam Copeland's AEW debut against Luchasaurus is at the top, but then at the bottom, the note is my birthday.
Oh, that's awesome. That's funny.
So,
I like Tony Khan. I really do.
So yeah, they've got to ruin his birthday. But I think that, you know, this is, of course, not Tuesday notwithstanding. I do really wonder if this is a very strong play to intertwine Raw and NXT so much so that it feels like they are interwoven in a way where they cannot be separated for a potential television suitor. And
yeah.
And then afterward, after the dust has settled, the deal is done, then they can make the call as to whether or not that suitor is expecting ratings that will require them to keep main roster talent on the show.
That's a beautiful thought, because like I hadn't really thought about it, like in terms of like business and kind of TV deals. Like, you know, it's not really. I don't know. I'm not super, super interested in all of that. So it's kind
sure.
of like, I don't pay attention to a lot of it, but it obviously has been big news lately. So I hadn't really kind of thought of it from that angle. So thank you. I'm glad I brought it up. With that, I think that's going to bring us to the end of Wrestling Night in America, guys. I am Nate Lindberg. You can check out all the things that I do at natelindberg.com, whether it's wrestling related or not. I write the hits and misses. I've given up writing the hits and misses for a weekly on a weekly basis, but I will be doing hits and misses for all of the premium live events, whether they're on a Wednesday or a Saturday or Sunday. So I'm still going to be writing those. But you can also find me on PWT Talks NXT on the right here on the PW Dorch Daily Cast Tuesdays shortly after NXT goes off the air. Brandon, thank you very much for being here with me tonight, filling in for Greg. And who are you?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a lot of fun to do this. Really cool to work with you for the first time on the Torch. And
yeah
you can follow me at BLeClaire12 on Twitter. And then of course you can find my my work for PW Torch. Usually at least a couple times a month, I'm covering all AEW pay-per-views and all WWE premium live events. So last week I covered Wrestle Dream in exhaustive, extensive detail. And tonight, of course, doing WWE Fastlane. I'll be back for, I think the next event is a Saudi show, I would imagine. And then, of course, Full Gear for AEW in November.
Oh.
So you can look forward to those. And then I also am now the permanent co-host of this show, normally with Greg Parks, on nights that are post-PLE or pay-per-view. So I'm here with Greg Parks after every AEW pay-per-view and after every WWE PLE. So you can find me there. And then you can also find me usually at least once a month with Wade Keller on a Raw or SmackDown or Dynamite post-show.
All right. We actually have one more caller that just popped up. So I know we just said our goodbyes, but you
just
know
kidding.
What? Just kidding. Let's go ahead. I do have to run for the hills because it's getting late and I do have to be up somewhat early tomorrow, but let's go to area code 409 real quick. And thank you for calling in. Let us know who you are and let's talk some wrestling for a couple minutes here.
Hi. Hello. This is Freddie out of North Hollywood. Sorry for joining the show late, but I'm a really big fan of Montez Ford, and I was reading in an interview recently where he said he would welcome back CM Punk, you know, to WWE and possibly maybe sometime soon to see who's the best person coming out of Chicago. I wanted to know you guys' opinion possibly on that matchup and how they would tell the story. And I guess overall, in general, if that's a good idea. I appreciate you taking the call.
Yeah, man, no problem. Glad you called in. I'm glad I happened to look at the switchboard before ending the call and seeing you there. So no problem with the late call-in. But yeah, so I didn't see that that particular interview, Montez Ford. I think it's smart for him to call out CM Punk as long as like he was cool, you know, like the WWE was gonna, you know, not gonna like get on him or whatever for potentially, you know, bringing it up, especially if they're not in talks with CM Punk. I'm not really sure. I know that that's kind of a rumor floating around there right now. But I think it's smart for him. I mean, you know, any time that, you can kind of build heat on, especially social media nowadays, like why not go for it? You know, especially with somebody that's controversial like CM Punk, you know, you're getting your name out there. And as long as he was confident that, you know, he wasn't going to get in trouble with his employer, or I guess his contractor, then sure, I'm all for it. Now, am I for bringing CM Punk to WWE? Hell no. I just don't think he's really worth the time. Sure, he's going to draw money. He's absolutely going to draw money, partially because he's controversial and, you know, there are people that are just going to tune in to see what the hell he's going to do behind the scenes and in front of the camera. But I don't know if his backstage antics, as long as his back, you know, everything that has been talked about backstage in AEW wasn't just blown up out of, and, you know, for, you know, to get people talking, you know, if that everything backstage actually happened the way that it was reported and talked about. And I do kind of buy it. I believe it just simply because of the person that he is and all of the interviews that we've heard about with CM Punk, you know, from whether it be other people's, you know, third party stories of Punk or even interviews himself. He's just that type of a person where controversy always seems to follow. He kind of likes to get himself into situations that may not be super professional. That kind of like behavior would have been great in like the Attitude Era locker room, right? You know, probably would have fit right in. But you know, not really today. It kind of goes in the opposite direction of what they're looking for backstage, as far as I'm aware, anyway. And you know, WWE is a corporate environment for the most part. I mean, I work in corporate environments. I work in a pretty fun corporate environment too. And there's no way I would wind up behaving any way that CM Punk reportedly has, you know, behind the scenes and in a corporate environment. So I am not a fan or a proponent of bringing CM Punk back to WWE as a whole. If they do, and, you know, hypothetically there's a match between he and Montez Ford, I think it'll be fun. You know, CM Punk certainly lost a step in the ring, you know, since he was, you know, on fire in WWE. He can still go for sure, but he's, you know, he's definitely not the CM Punk of old for, you know, by any stretch. I think it'd be a great match, and I think Montez Ford would absolutely shine there. CM Punk, I believe, is enough of a professional in the ring, especially if there's somebody that he likes and wants to put over, somebody probably like Montez Ford that's very, very likable, and especially from, you know, from Chicago. I think, you know, he'd probably be very, very generous in the match and make Montez Ford look like $1 million. So anyway, those are my two cents about CM Punk and the match with hypothetical match with Montez Ford. Brandon, let me throw it over to you on CM Punk and Ford.
So So Punk, it doesn't surprise me that Ford made those comments. I think, like you alluded to, it's a smart move. I think he is probably well aware that he's not going to get in any trouble, because a lot of people have been asking these questions of WWE talent, and none of them have seemed too shy about answering. So it seems to me as though Ford probably knows that he's well covered. I mean, Roman Reigns has spoken about Punk at this point, so if Reigns can do it,
yeah,
I would imagine the rest of the roster can as well. So he's probably good in that regard. I am – the CM Punk conversation in WWE is very tough for me, because I am a very, very big CM Punk fan, always have been. Do I think he's problematic? Absolutely. Do I think there was cause to fire him in AEW? Absolutely. Do I think that bringing him into WWE could be asking for trouble? You betcha. But on the other hand, I do think that someone of Punk's nature, the corporate environment that WWE has established, is actually better for him to be in, because there's going to be a very short leash. There is not going to be a bunch of talent that is leaking information consistently and constantly to the press. There isn't going to be other talent going out on television and starting fires that Punk feels the need to throw more gasoline on and refuse to put out. I think it is just a more professional environment that would, you know, there's controversy begets controversy, and for every action there is a reaction. And CM Punk said and did a lot of things in AEW that caused other people in AEW to react in ways that they shouldn't have as professionals. And then when they reacted, Punk had a further reaction, and the fires just grew and grew and grew and grew. And everyone bears some fault for that. I don't think that it ever gets to that point in WWE, because that company is just going to nip it. They're going to kill it before it ever makes it to television. And, you know, what happens backstage happens backstage. Could it be bad for the locker room? Absolutely. Do I think that people in WWE are professional enough to make it work if there's money involved for all parties? Definitely. And I think that's the sentiment that you're seeing among the talent. I mean, Montez Ford said it. Roman Reigns said it. There are apologies that need to be made on the side of CM Punk for this to be kosher within the company. And if that can happen and he can do it, then there's money to be made, and those people are willing to make that money.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I can't disagree. Unfortunately, I cannot disagree. Like, I think, you know, personally, I don't think he's worth it to bring back, but I can absolutely see the company going in that direction. You know, they've worked with plenty of people that they may not have questionable in the past. And, you know, like Ultimate Warrior. I mean, not only
right.
just, His past, you know, after the ring, but you know, his time in the ring, rather. But, you know, just the bridges that he burned, and, you know, they brought him back. So it's like never say never in WWE. I can certainly see them. I'd honestly almost be surprised if they don't bring him back. I just don't think, I don't know. I don't think they should. It's just kind of my personal thing. I definitely think there's money in it. I definitely think there's money in it, and it is probably gonna wind up happening. But I kind of like what you said too about him probably thriving in that type of a corporate environment, is that there really is not. He's gonna have a very short leash, like you said, and you know, like again, like you said, that there aren't going to be all these people backstage just, you know, immediately, you know, throwing things on the internet. You know, leaking things to, you know, whether it be, you know, Fightful or us or whatever. So, yeah, I think.
Or going out in a promo and saying it, you know.
Or that. So, yeah, you know, those press conferences, those, man, It almost seemed like they're more trouble than they're worth to AEW sometimes, but
they're compelling television. But
they're certainly compelling.
Are they messy?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Like they're probably worth it, but man, they almost don't seem like it sometimes. All right, with that, I'm going to run for the hills, guys. We said our sign off and our goodbyes earlier. So again, once again, Brandon, this was awesome, a pleasure. Glad we finally got to do some audio together, man. And I hope. Hope we don't, where we get to do this at some point in the future. It's not just a one-off.
For sure.
Cool. All right, guys. Greg Parks will be back next week for Wrestling Night in America. I'm Nate Lindberg from PWT Talks NXT, and we'll catch you next time. Take care.